Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. My name is Bennett Pomerantz, and this is an episode of The Legal Show. And before I forget, and I want to say this because people ask me, is Sarah with you? Well, I can't answer that. Sarah, why don't you answer it?
I think I shall answer it now. I'm definitely here. Hi, Bennett. How are you?
I'm in love with this beautiful woman named Sarah. She is, I love her dearly. She is my attorney of record. She's the busiest person, attorney-wise, I know. And she has my utmost and endless respect. So, when we do these shows, it's amazing. People drive me crazy. It's like, where's Sarah? Why are you hiding her? I want to make perfectly clear, I am not hiding Sarah.
No, I watch every post that Bennett makes about my absence, and I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, they're 100% true. They may be tragic, but they are true.
I understand. I will say this, and I will say this because Sarah's here, but I'll say this. If she says something to me in private, I don't tell you guys. I love you, but you don't need to know things. Okay?
Well, all knowledge is given on a need-to-know basis.
That's about correct as I can get. So, as I said, my name is Bennett Pomerantz, and this is the lovely, talented, my attorney of record, Sarah Steele. You have a disclaimer to give these lovely people?
I do have a disclaimer to give the lovely people. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As Bennett said, my name is Sarah Steele, and I am an attorney, licensed to practice in the state of Georgia. And we're going to sit and talk about a very interesting legal issue tonight, but we wanted to let you know that if you talk to us either via message or over the phone or in person or anything like that, the act of communicating with us, either Bennett or myself, or listening to the legal show does not create an attorney-client relationship. Also, all of you good listeners of the legal show should not act nor refrain from acting based upon any information contained in any message from either Bennett or me or from listening to the legal show. In fact, you all should seek competent professional counsel regarding the facts, the specific facts and circumstances at issue in your case. So no batteries, required, no assembly required either, but this is not legal advice what we're doing tonight, I promise you.
Now, I put an addendum in this. You see, I'm using nice and legal terms. She is my attorney of choice. She ain't yours.
Right. I am many, many people's attorney of record, but not anyone who's listening yet. Reach out to me and, and see exactly what it is I can do for you in the event that that is a need that you have.
Okay, let's talk about tonight's case. Now, I'm not trying to rush you. We only have 25 minutes, so I want to make sure we're covering everything and everybody.
Quite all right. And we always have to leave. We also have to leave plenty of time for you to do your homework. I always remember that part, too.
Do I love this woman? She knows me too well. Why don't we discuss tonight's case?
Okay. So there has been new ways of obtaining evidence in legal cases ever since the discovery of DNA. And matter of fact, and I'm not even kidding, the discovery of DNA goes back to, I want to say, the late 1800s, early 1900s. But the technology has, of course, developed substantially since then. And a lot of law enforcement officers and different agencies have been using it to link people to crime for years. Well, if you're a fan of the show of Adam Ruins Everything, which I am, it is not. You'll discover that it's not exactly a foolproof method of proving or disproving someone in regards to their guilt or innocence. But, it's something that if the DNA definitely matches, then that's something that can be very, very helpful to both the prosecutors and the investigators. So we've established this. We've all watched Law and Order at one point in time, especially the listeners of this show. I'm sure they have. and they have seen where, you know, somebody got their cheek swabbed or something to that effect by the police or by the crime scene investigator or something to that effect in an effort to prove or disprove someone's guilt or innocence. So that information is kept in databases, you know, in governmental databases. And, you know, the FBI has one, every state Bureau of Investigation has one, even local authorities, depending on where you have, can have them. And so whenever they get DNA at a crime scene, what are they going to do, Bennett?
Put it in court, in the record.
That's right. They're going to put it in court in the record if anything matches. And so that's something they've been doing for a long time. But here's the newest story, and I'm, you know, and I, again, this is the last show we were going to do before we took our hiatus for Bennett's health, but I don't think this will come as a surprise to anybody whenever I say that what it is we're going to talk about is still, you know, going on. And that is that investigators are now broadening their DNA searches beyond governmental databases. That's right. And they're now demanding genetic information from companies that do ancestry research for their customers. There's two major companies that research family lineage for about, I don't know, probably around $200. And that over the last few years, they have received law enforcement demands for genetic information stored in their databases. And those two major companies are Ancestry.com and 23andMe. And on average, they've been reporting a total together in this article that I'm reading right now, or that I'm reading from, is from March of 2016. But at that point, they had a total of 5 requests from law enforcement agencies for the genetic material of 6 different individuals in their growing databases of hundreds of thousands. Now, 5 out of hundreds of thousands of people getting these, you know, tests done, just, you know, for happiness and giggles, and for research of their own genetic background, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. But what if you're one of those 5 people? And that's kind of what we're here to talk about, because Ancestry.com turned over one person's data for an investigation into the murder and rape of an 18-year-old woman in Idaho. 23andMe have received the other 4 court orders, but persuaded the investigators to withdraw the requests. So Ancestry.com at that point actually had been the one to give in, where 23andMe had not. And the company said that law enforcement demands for genetic information are rare, and that's fine. But, of course, then there's the other side of it, where privacy advocates and experts are concerned that the genetic information turned over for, you know, just what it is you're paying for, medical and family history research, or for any other reason, could be misused by investigators, and these few cases could be start of a trend. And the theory is that there will be more requests as times go on and the technology evolves. You know, we did a show similar to this. Oh, gosh, I can't remember whenever it was, Bennett, but it was during our first iteration of the show. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
About 2 or 3 years ago, we did it.
Yes. Well, I was going to say another show, and it was a show about subpoenaing the text messages and the GPS location on the phone. You remember we talked about that, and that was a privacy issue. Well, this kind of
right.
runs along the same line. It's like, where exactly is this going to stop? We have a cell phone, you know, theoretically for personal or maybe even business transactions these days, and maybe it's your only phone. You know, there's not a lot of people that still have a home phone, and instead they use their cell phone. But let's just say that, you know, that's what they expected to use it for. They certainly don't expect their GPS location to be turned over to law enforcement for the purposes of investigation. And so in the one case where the DNA was turned over, this was in the summer of 2014, and the court documents showed that the Idaho Falls Police Department obtained a warrant to seize genetic information from Ancestry.com, and the rape that they were investigating was from 1996. So that was a rape that occurred 18 years prior. And there was somebody by the name of Christopher Tapp, and he was sentenced to life in prison for the murder and rape, but he was appealing his conviction, and he stated that his confession for the crime was coerced. And then police at that time were still working on the case at the insistence of the incarcerated gentleman's mother, because the only DNA found on her body was not his, and so they believed another suspect was involved. So as heart-wrenching as that is for the person who was raped and murdered, you know, this gentleman is also sitting in court saying, but I'm innocent, please let me out, there was other DNA there. So really the ethics question is, what's more important? Is privacy of the individual more important, or is the freedom of a guilty or a man who may not be guilty more important?
Well, I believe the man is innocent until proven guilty, but now with the DNA, I mean, CSI and you know, all these lovely TV shows they run nowadays where they check DNA. I mean, Law and Order, CSI, all these wonderful shows, it boggles the mind.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, it absolutely does. And, you know, and that's the debate that, you know, we're here to discuss today is, where's the line? Is it proper for
your
us?
Your opinion,
again,
is the line. I'm sorry, Sarah.
I'm sorry, say again.
In your opinion, where is the line?
I personally think that a good, happy medium to all of this is having the ability to turn it over to law enforcement if it is consented to. So whenever you send off your cheek swab to these companies to find out where it is that, you know, your genes come from or whatever the case may be, maybe at that point in time you could sign a waiver to say, hey, if need be, then, you know, if law enforcement ever needs it, they can go ahead and take it, because I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, this is never going to be a problem. And, you know, there's plenty of people that will actually do that. And I know I personally would have no issue with that myself, although I still probably never would, because, well, I'm kind of a privacy freak. And I mean, of course, like I said, I don't anticipate having any sort of run-ins with law enforcement anytime soon, if for absolutely no other reason, my son and my bar card. But at the same time, I'm not entirely sure if I want the police to have this information. And so, you know, at least give me the option of being able to do that.
Well, let me ask you a question here. This is from Diane Barrows. I don't know her. I know the spelling of her name, but I'm not going to give it because privacy issues. Let's say this. Diane states to you, Sarah, this is your question here. Sarah, do you think this is going to continue with the police?
You know what? I really, that's a very good question, and thank you very much for writing into the show. As I was researching the show, you know, I told you I looked at the articles that I was looking at back in 2015 and 2016. You know, it took a very short search whenever I was doing my research to find an article from 2019 as recently as February. So I think it has continued. And think about this, the first good article that I could find on this was 2015. So this was four years has passed since people have started talking about this, and until there are lawsuits where people ask the hard-hitting questions like, you know, exactly what we're talking about here. Where's the line? Where is an innocent person sitting in jail? Where does that get waived with an innocent person being doggedly pursued because they didn't even know that whenever they gave over this DNA that it could possibly become part of a, you know, law enforcement investigation at a later point in time? I think that's why the happy medium really would be, you know, still give people the option to do the Ancestry.com or the 23andMe, you know, type searches, but give them the option of destroy my DNA whenever you've given me the test that I need, or, yeah, go ahead and keep it if you need to. I'm never going to be in trouble with law enforcement, so I don't care anyway. And if they give their consent for the police to have it or any law enforcement agency to have it, give them the rights to rescind that consent at any point in time. I think people would be a lot more comfortable with it because it's all about consent. I think people would be a lot more comfortable with it if they had, you know, the option to rescind consent initially and then later on down the road.
Okay. This question is from Marsha. And I know it is not Marsha Casper Cook, so whoever asked that part of that question, it's not that Marsha, but that's okay. Marsha asks, if there's similar markers of DNA in the person's swab or blood or whatever, can that be held against them in court?
As far as now, I don't know for you all who may or may not know, new listeners may not know this, but no one's old, right? Our prior listeners from before the hiatus for Bennett's Health may recall that my undergrad's in microbiology. And so I know a little bit more about the scientific side than most lawyers. It is to my understanding, to answer your question, Marcia, it has not been an issue in court as of yet if something is similar. Because, see, that's the good, you know, oh, I was just having this conversation today on my Facebook. In the world of fuzzy math and fake news and accusations of things like that all around the board, it's very hard for people these days to still wrap their brains around the fact that there is such a thing as cold, hard facts in science. And I am not attacking anyone's religion. I'm a very religious person. I'm a very spiritual person. But I am not attacking anybody's feelings. God knows everybody has feelings. But what people don't understand is that they're not facts. They are not science. And Marcia, by the way, I'm absolutely not, you know, enraged or incensed at you by any stretch. I'm glad you asked this question. And the reason why I say that is because whenever it comes to DNA, you either have a match or you don't. You can't have, I mean, you could have similar markers in regards to, you know, race or eye color or something to that effect, but that's as far as it stops, you know, or that's as far as it goes and it stops there. In order to match DNA for it to be a complete match, it has to be a complete match. There is no, oh, well, you know, we're looking for somebody with blonde hair and blue eyes, and this guy's got blonde hair and blue eyes, so maybe this is the person who did it. No, it doesn't work like that. It has to be an exact match, and because the entire point of DNA is to prove that the sample that they gathered at the crime scene matches the person who actually did it and was not similar. I mean, my gosh, if we went by similar, then that could, you know, clog up the courts forever. You know, like I said, blonde hair, blue eyed person, you find all the blonde hair, blue eyed people, you know, that was in a general area. Well, then you're back to square one, basically, and puts a certain amount of doubt in what it is that you're doing. And some of these crimes are so heinous with sentences so long, you kind of don't want to have room for error, which is kind of why DNA is used in the first place.
Okay, this is from Brian. And I'm reading this, so please, people, I'm just reading the name here. This is from Elizabeth and Brian, and this is Brian. He says, do you think DNA will be the future of fingerprinting? I'm confused. I think what he means is, are we going to look at the DNA instead of the fingerprints?
I think that's the question he's asking. Yeah, in other words, fingerprinting came first, and, you know, you can trace that back to the days of Sherlock Holmes whenever the police were just, forensics were in its early infancy, and they were starting to develop this technology in the late 1800s. And so here's the thing, Brian and Elizabeth, and thank you for listening, and a couple at that, that's awesome. Just as much as there are issues with fingerprinting, as I said, if you've ever watched Saturn Ruins Everything, their follow-up episode to DNA, you know, it's a very precise science, but it's not absolutely perfect. You know, some of the things that they cited on that show is the contamination of the evidence that's taken. There was a case where a hair was found at a particular crime scene, and it ended up being a dog hair, you know, because whenever they tried to break down the DNA, or there was another hair that was found at a different crime scene, and it ended up being part of the crime scene investigators' hair. And I think there was another case where there was DNA, because you not only have the people who are using the swabs, there's also people who created the swabs, and unless you're working in a perfectly sterile environment, which perfect sterility is very hard to obtain, then what it is you're looking at is the people who are making these cotton swabs might end up actually contaminating them before they even get to the crime scene investigators. And that's really seriously the scary part. So as idealistic as that might be, Brian and Elizabeth, that might end up not being the case. because of the imperfections. Now, have we, you know, dealt with fingerprints for generations upon generations and used those to convict? Absolutely. Have we done the same with DNA? Absolutely. Do I think we still will? Absolutely. Because while it's an imperfect science, it's still better than what it was we had before. But the future of that is now. You know, that has been used for quite some time. And so I think that's something that they're going to stick with. And the use of these databases just prove it. This past February, a few months ago, meaning like 3 months ago, the Family Tree DNA company came under fire for volunteering giving the FBI routine access to its database of more than 1 million users' data. And they were allowing agents to test DNA samples from crime scenes against their customers' genetic information to look for family matches. And Family Tree DNA eventually apologized for not disclosing that agreement to the consumers. In other words, they didn't let them know, hey, when you give us your DNA, this can happen. The company then told the New York Times that users can disable the matching option to prevent their data from being visible. And Ancestry.com and 23andMe say that they require a warrant now or a subpoena before they consider turning over data to law enforcement. That's what was going on in 2015. But this other company, and I remember whenever I saw this in the news, because I remember thinking, I really must do a legal show on that one day. But Family Tree DNA didn't even require a warrant or subpoena. They just opened the door and let the FBI in. And so that's kind of scary. But, you know, on, again, the flip side, got to play devil's advocate. This is not the first time that this sort of database was used, because if you remember, I think this was last year, the Golden State Killer was finally able to be caught because crime scene DNA was compared against publicly available genetic data to identify the suspect. So somebody that had eluded law enforcement for decades finally came to justice as a result of this. But, you know, it's not just law enforcement and the FBI and people like that who want your DNA either. Drug makers also want access. So Ancestry.com and 23andMe, they have upwards of 15 million users together, both share anonymized genetic data with outside researchers and company. For example, last summer, 23andMe struck a drug development deal with GlaxoSmithKline and is working on developing its own line of drug treatments as a result of the DNA that they got. Ancestry has worked with Google spinoff Calico to study human longevity, and these companies are saying that they obtained the customer's informed consent or explicit permission before DNA is used in scientific or medical research. Kathy Hibbs, 23andMe's chief legal and regulatory officer, said that assembling large aggregated data sets of human DNA can speed up drug development. So that's their argument. And the company says that 80% of its customers opt in to research the programs. So I've never, you know, utilized one of these companies before, but apparently now, since all of this started becoming a thing in the last 4 years, all of the, at least 23andMe and Ancestry is giving you the option of opting into things like, hey, if we make your DNA anonymous, is it okay if we submit it to drug companies so that they can research medications? Sounds very laudable, doesn't it? I mean, just humanitarian on one side, down the other. Don't let them fool you, folks. They're actually getting money from doing this. So if you're okay with your anonymous information being sold and you not seeing any money from it, number one, and number two, it helping allegedly, you know, human longevity studies and drug treatment studies and all this, then, yeah, go ahead. But, you know, we've done shows on intellectual property. Well, this is your biological property. I say, if you're going to sell my information, how about you give me a piece of it? Because you know that they're not doing this for any small amount of money. And then the last sort of scary area of all of this is where app stores and different apps are buying your DNA as well. There's a firm called Helix that acts like an app store platform that gives third-party software developers access to part of customers' DNA data for apps and personalized services that consumers opt into separately. Helix has partnerships with around 25 companies. There's things like, so you're wondering, you know, well, how can this all tie into my DNA? Fitness and wellness apps. Those are very popular amongst the apps there in the Helix company. For example, the weight loss app Lose integrates genetic information to tailor diet and exercise recommendations. Helix analysts work closely with third parties to provide privacy guidelines, but does not dictate their policies. You know, and then other personal DNA tests are used to predict genetic risk factors and health complications. 23andMe offers FDA-approved genetic risk reports for inherited breast cancer and colorectal cancer. And the results may allow customers to manage their own health, but they can also lead to revelations that are surprising or alarming. So they have to remind them of that, too. So the takeaway from this, really.
All night, we only have, like, 3 minutes.
Oh, do you need to do your homework?
No, you need to do yours. I want you to tell them the schedule for the next 2 weeks for
okay.
you.
Okay. Okay, let me tell you about
whatever.
The schedule. So that you not you don't think that, you know, Bennett has somehow kidnapped me, and then I'll tell you what the takeaway needs to be from this. Next week, on the 23rd, I will be in Tampa, Florida, teaching at the Florida Fire Academy down there, so I will not be on the show because I'll be Teacher Sarah. The weekend after that, I'm traveling to Palm Springs, California to do some more teaching on the 30th, and so I will not be doing a show then. So we'll be back on the radio, barring no unforeseen circumstances, on June 6th. What our topic is, we don't know yet because Sarah hasn't told Bennett what it's going to be. So we will see you back on the radio.
Not me, okay?
Yes.
Because somebody says, oh,
but I promise you, it will be something.
Yes, I run my own show.
That's right. It'll be something topical and lovely as always. But yes, so I want to make sure that I wish everyone a happy Memorial Day weekend. And the takeaway that you need to take from this, since we have about a minute left, is that commercial DNA testing services are not specifically covered by federal privacy rules like HIPAA because they're not health providers or insurers. They are subject to the FTC's protections and privacy disclosure, but protections can get murky whenever genomic data is used for human subject medical research and other things. So before you decide to opt into one of these services, make sure you know what you're getting, you know, buyer beware. And that's the best advice that I can give for you tonight, Bennett.
Okay, let me do my homework for a minute. On Anything Goes on Tuesday, Kelly Stone Gamble will be my guest. And if you haven't read her stuff, you should go out and buy it. No, no. And we have guests coming up. If somebody asked me, am I getting Yvonne Mason? Yes, she's coming. Am I getting Paris Alton Bonds? She's coming. We're getting all the guests you want. And any that you don't have, let me know. I'll contact them and have them, or try to get them on the show. That's basically, we're running down here. Not because I don't think Sarah or I are run down, but we're running down because it's time-wise. We love to stay for hours, and that may happen soon enough. But
yeah, and this
now.
Is one of my favorite topics, so I knew I was going to ramble on and on and on about it. So
and
it's science and law, of course. I love it.
I want to say two things, okay? And Sarah touched on it momentarily. People, and I say this to you, all the people here. I'm not hiding Sarah from anything. I'm very honest about where Sarah is. If, you know, she needs a business day. I understand that. You guys understand that. Don't guilt me and say, well, it's your fault. It's not my fault. I'm just letting you know.
No, I promise you, Bennett doesn't dictate what I do. It's sometimes the other way around, though.
We knew that. Come on.
We did.
Okay.
We did.
I enjoy her company, and anytime I can have her on the radio, I'm the luckiest man in the world. But I'm going to say this for both of us, if I can. Good night. Fly right. Be well. Good night.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.